that for some of you folks, you found salvation at that class, right? Just remember that.
I missed it.
We were talking about our identities, and part of one of the questions was whether we were mostly body or mostly spirit, and so we did a little kind of hypnosis thing about imagining you were with a lemon, and several people salivated to that. I just wanted to remind those people that they found salvation.
I mean, I missed the salvation too.
Yes, you did. So, one of the people who was here last time didn't show up again this time, unless she showed up and left when I didn't show up. So if you promised to tell us, last time I'm going to talk today about stories, I'm going to read you a story, and I'm going to ask you to do some thinking about your own favorite fairy tale as a story that we'll do a little bit of work with if you want to. But she reminded me that at the beginning of the... Oh! Is there a mic that I'm supposed to say something to? This is...
Yeah.
Oh, this is Jerry Bongard, and I'm here. And you can start today. And we're talking today about the inner child, and especially the stories that the inner child relates to. Last time we were here, we talked about the story of Adam and Eve and about my belief that that's a story that has a lot to do with our own nature, but that it's a story basically also of our story before we're born and then our birth. And I talked about the nature of sin, and she said, "You didn't explain that." And she was also sharp enough to catch on that if, and those of you who were here last time, this will just take a minute and then I'll go on to the new session, that if we're, I said that we are by nature wonderfully made in the image and likeness of God, rather than that we are created sinful and unclean, and that human beings are basically wonderfully in the image and likeness of God. And she was sharp enough to catch then that that would pose a problem for some people who believe that baptism is necessary for people to be restored to God. That if we're all wonderfully made, everybody's going to go to heaven. Well, maybe they all will. But the story of Adam and Eve is also a birth story that we get separated from our source of life, which, as a metaphor at least, is our mother's womb. And that separation is important to many of us, maybe all of us, and that baptism is a way of restoring into a kind of unity the separated people who are separate from their understanding of God, which in the womb was being nurtured and safe and created and given life. And that needs to happen again, that they need to be in a family, an extended family like the church is a good one, but I don't believe a necessary one, my own personal heresy here. But that the church can be a very wonderful way of incorporating that person who has left the womb back into the body, which is either the body of Christ or the body of Holy Mother the Church or the body of the family of God. And so that, in a very short nutshell, is what I should have said last time, and forgot to in the face of questions that were asked last time. Now I want to talk to you about stories.
Yes. One thing I think you should show people both sides of your shirt and tell them what you do.
I'm the director of a counseling center called Chrysalis Counseling Center, and some friends bought this shirt for me when I made that move. This is a caterpillar about to enter the chrysalis. And the chrysalis is that place where you're safe. And then you emerge as a butterfly. So it was just a very, very fine gift, very symbolic, and I plan to wear it each of my teaching sessions, and I plan to write on my forehead the time of the
next.
Well, on the forehead wouldn't work unless I bring a mirror with it. I'd better write it on my wrist or on my hand or something.
I will keep
track. Will you watch the shirt?
I have another one on under the stick. Just to take care of that. Honestly, I just can't imagine how that happened. I don't believe I ever did that once when I was teaching scheduled classes. This is probably my first time.
I think it might be a fine commentary on Holy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Very well. You know, I was with this just very wonderful deer who was grazing, and I started talking to her, and, well, you probably don't want to hear about this. It was just, she actually... Gail laughs at me because I sing to the fish too and I snarkle, but I think animals appreciate being spoken to.
I talk to them all the time.
Yeah, and they respond, don't they? They come forward and they listen.
Yeah.
And we talked about this session, in fact. I told her about some of the ideas I had. She seemed very interested. I hope you're as interested as she is. She munched along on these little things she was eating as I spoke, which is not a bad idea to bring snacks either. I do want to make this comment for those of you who have any interest in this kind of topic and subject matter. Tomorrow at 3:30, I'm doing an extended session to give you a chance to volunteer, if you would so wish, to do a particular kind of work that many people find very helpful, to be age regressed back into the womb, and then perhaps a little earlier than that, to who knows what will happen for you. Many, many people have wonderful, wonderful experiences doing that, and you would have to be able to share it publicly if you volunteer to do it, because we'll be in the middle of a bunch of people when we do it. So if you have any idea that that might be something that you'd be interested in, I encourage you to think about that and come and volunteer at 3:30 tomorrow. And we'll have a long session from 3:30.
Come and watch.
Oh yes, come and watch, sure. And there'll be commentary all along about what's happening. Assuming it happens. 9 out of 10 times it does. We'll just have to see who the volunteers are and I'll comment on that. I want to do several stories today, and we'll get into your own story in just a few minutes, but I'm pushing this book just because it's such an excellent book. And today we're talking about the inner child, and I was actually going to have you do some writing, but I didn't have enough writing materials to hand around, and so we're not going to do that. I'll mention to you that one thing that many people find to be very helpful is if they have anything in life that they're thinking about, could be a problem, but it could be something different from a problem, that if you take a notebook and write to the little inner child inside, like, I'd write, "Dear little Jerry, I'm thinking about this, and you know, I'd like to have your thoughts about it. Just share with me what you think I should do about this or what this is about. Love, Jerry." And then if I take the pencil from my dominant writing hand to my non-dominant writing hand, it helps touch into the right brain. And the right brain has a place of intuition and creativity and worship as well and many other wonderful things. And I find that for me personally and for most of the people who I encourage to do this, that handwriting for the little kid inside can write, "Dear Jerry," and then actually mine prints because it doesn't write very well with this hand. Sometimes some wisdom that I would not otherwise have comes forward. And I was going to do an exercise like that. We might end up doing that on Friday too. But today we're just going to tell stories to the little kid. And I know a lot of you already know this story. But I ordered it for the bookstore, and you said, "I'm going to order a book for the bookstore." Let me show you a prologue to this story. The first time I ever heard it, I have a friend who has been a friend of mine now for about 18 years. He's a Lutheran pastor who has recently, about 5 years ago, retired because his physical health gave out. He developed Parkinson's disease. And as a result of the Parkinson's disease, developed some depression and became somewhat immobilized, both mentally and physically. And he's a good friend of mine. I go to see him every Wednesday. I have for the last 6 or 7 years now, at least since he developed Parkinson's. And one Wednesday when I was over at his home, I should tell you again, part of the story that I knew also that you might as well know about this. Many, many years ago, it must be 30-some years ago now, they had a son who they named after their father, the husband, my friend. And he lived to be about 3 months and then died a crib death, a sudden infant death syndrome. His death was so devastating to his mother that she had a nervous breakdown, as to the way they talk about it now. And she was in the hospital for quite a long time, and she was home for quite a long time. And my friend, who is now, I notice I'm intentionally not saying, just in case he ever hears this tape, they might not like to be mentioned by name. My friend nursed his wife to health very lovingly, as she was so devastated by the death of Junior, named after my friend. When he developed Parkinson's, and this was about a year after he did, maybe 2 years after the Parkinson's, well, it probably was about 2.5 years, he had already been in a hospital for depression, and I was severely debilitated. I was over visiting them on a Wednesday afternoon, which is my customary time to come she pulled this book out and she said, Jerry, I want to read this book to you. She said, this is a book I bought for my granddaughter and I want to read it to you. And as she started reading it, I knew darn well what was going on. She was reading this book to my friend. And the message in this book was a message she was giving to him. And I was the pretext. She could read it out loud to me. And I'm going to read this book to you now. And it's for your little girl inside, your little boy inside, whatever. And you can use the metaphor for God or whatever, for parent, for whatever it might be. The book is called Love You Forever, written by Robert Munch, illustrated by Sheila McGraw. And those illustrations are important. I'll show them to you too. A mother held her new baby and very slowly rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she held him, she sang, and I wish I knew that tune. I've asked Billy for it, and this is to be sung. And I'm going to read it to you because I don't know the melody to it. I've never heard the melody except Billy tried to teach it to me this morning, and I didn't quite catch it. I love you forever. I like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be. And in the picture, I'll pass this book around later while we're doing other things and you can see it, but maybe you get a glimpse of it now. The picture is of a mother holding her baby in her arms and singing while the cat sort of stretches and scratches along the chair. The baby grew. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was 2 years old and he ran all around the house. He pulled all the books off the shelves. He pulled all the food out of the refrigerator. And he took his mother's watch and flushed it down the toilet. Sometimes his mother would say, this kid is driving me crazy. And there's the picture. It's the same as the one in the cover. But at nighttime, when that two-year-old was quiet, she opened the door to his room, crawled across the floor, looked up over the side of his bed. And if he was really asleep, she picked him up and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. While she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be. She's looking at him in the bed. Little boy grew. I love this picture. He's a teenager. Oh, he's 9, I guess. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was 9 years old, and he never wanted to come in for dinner. He never wanted to take a bath. And when Grandma visited, he always said bad words. Sometimes his mother wanted to sell him to the zoo and shows him chewing bubble gum and tracking in mud. Just like I guess for our kids, it was older than 9 when they did that, but typical kid. But at nighttime when he was asleep, his mother quietly opened the door to his room, crawled across the floor, and looked up over the side of the bed. If he was really asleep, she picked up that 9-year-old boy and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. The boy grew. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew till he was a teenager. He had strange friends. He wore strange clothes and he listened to strange music. Sometimes the mother felt like she was in a zoo. There he is acting like Elvis Presley. I don't know who it is now. Looks like Elvis Presley to me.
I love the cold pieces of pizza.
Yeah, it's a pretty typical picture. I was at a party just like this a week or so ago. That's another story, though. At nighttime, when that teenager was asleep, the mother opened the door to his room, crawled across the floor, and looked up over the side of the bed. If he was really asleep, she picked up that great big boy and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. While she rocked him, she sang, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be. The teenager grew. He grew and he grew and he grew. He grew until he was a grown-up man. He left home and got a house across town, and it shows the moving man coming to pick up their stuff to put in the house across town. And sometimes on dark nights, the mother got into her car and drove across town.
You didn't show us the picture.
What?
Yeah.
This happened to be the point in the story when I first heard it. When my friend said, you know, they don't really do that. And she said, yes, they do. And she's right. They do. They do. Not only across town, but wherever those kids are. If all the lights in her son's house were out, she opened his bedroom window, crawled across the floor, and looked up over the side of his bed. If that great big man was really asleep, she picked him up and rocked him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while she rocked him, she sang, "I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be." Well, that mother, she got older. She got older and older and older. One day she called up her son and said, "You better come see me because I'm very old and sick." So her son came to see her. When he came in the door, she tried to sing the song. She sang, "I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always." But she couldn't finish because she was too old and too sick. The son went to his mother. He picked her up and rocked her back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And he sang this song, "I'll love you forever, I'll like you always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be."
Who can you read that?
I've read it a thousand times.
When the son came home that night, he stood for a long time at the top of the stairs. Then he went into the room where his very new baby daughter was sleeping. He picked her up in his arms and very slowly rocked her back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And while he rocked her, he sang this song, "I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be." By the time that this woman my friend and the wife of my friend finished reading this song, I was smart enough to know what was happening. And I thought about her when she was so devastated by her young son's death that she was in a hospital being treated for depression, and my friend picking her up in his arms and rocking her back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and singing, "I'll love you forever, I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby will be." And I looked at him now, not only devastated by his Parkinson's disease, but by his own thoughts about himself, which were very depressed thoughts. In fact, one Wednesday when I went over there and his wife left the room, he asked if I would help him die. Would I help him? I'm thinking of her now reading this book and saying, you know, "I'm reading this book to you," she says to me. But telling this guy, "I love you forever, I like you for always, as long as I'm living, my baby will be," picking him up in her arms and rocking him back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And so that book will always be my favorite, partly because of the book it is and partly because of my first memories of how that book was used to bring a message to me. I want to tell stories today. I want you to imagine that it's the truth whether it is or not. And I, you know, in these talks that I give, I say things that might be true and they might not be true. They're all things that can be interpreted many different ways. The talk I gave last time, I said I believe that we come from God and we go to God and that we have an actual experience of God before we're born. And we may or may not have actual experiences with God during this life that we recognize as epiphanies, but we probably will have one as soon as our body stops showing signs of life through breathing and heartbeat and those kinds of things. Near-death experiences, they call them, and I think they happen when you die as well. And that's something that could be argued, and it might be true, it might not. I think it is. What I'm about to say is I think that probably this hypothetical construct or this idea that we have inside of us a small child is probably true. That there probably is this little kid inside of me wanting to communicate with me and wanting me to know about him and take care of him, and he's probably in charge of a lot of my feelings, especially my fears, and maybe my joys too, my angers. But whether that's true or not, if we act as if it's true, it has wonderful results. people write these notes, these letters to their inner child. The inner child writes back such wonderful messages that are so helpful to them. And I want you to imagine that you have, you know, whether you believe you do or not, to imagine that you have this little kid inside of you and that this little kid responds to stories. And we'll talk about stories and tell stories and look at stories. And one of the stories is, I'll love you forever, I like you for always. Another story that some of us looked at yesterday is the story of Adam and Eve, where the little kid can just respond to all kinds of images there. And there are other stories. There are stories about Jesus, and I'm hoping that I'm going to have time to read one. I'm sure I will have time to read one. Maybe I'll do that right now and then move into some of your own stories. There's a lot of good books out these days, as you know. Many of them are in the Holden Library. I didn't happen to look and see whether this one is or not, but you might have some interest in it. It's called St. George and the Dragon and the Quest for the Holy Grail by Edward Hayes. How many of you know that book? Well, when I heard the announcements that Dave gave this morning about the garbology team being late, I just suddenly thought about reading this story to you about the garbage collector. Better look up in the table of contents so I can see which one it is. There's 23 stories in this book, and I'd say about 15 of them are quite good. Two or three are just excellent. One or two just aren't probably worth reading out loud ever, but the one I'm going to read to you is one of them that I like a lot, if I can find out here where it is. I might have my assistant here look through this while I do something else for a minute and find the one about the... Oh, I know it's in the back of the book that it gives in the index. Well, you know, somebody, if they were just to look at my presentation today, would think this guy is the most unorganized guy I've ever seen. He comes to class 10, 15 minutes late. He's got a story he's going to read. He doesn't even know what page it's on. I wonder if this guy has a brain in his head. At least that's what I think. I had somebody do this. Once there was a garbage man who worked in the little midwestern town of Pleasant Hill. He drove a battered blue Ford pickup truck with makeshift sideboards that rose 12 feet or more above the truck bed. Well, I was saying that about me. I want you to know how thoughtful I am, though. Many of you have been in discussions here where we talk about this huge gap between men and women, how hard it is for men to understand women and those things. So I have purposely been working on trying to look as pregnant as possible to just... And it's working, eh?
It isn't going to get any better this week.
When's the date?
He worked alone except for his ever-present companion, Spot, a white and brown dog with a ring around its eye. It's the one part of the story that isn't too terribly creative. Spot's the dog. kind of rings home, but no, a real creative author might think of different name for a dog.
It's realistic, though. That's how kids name them. We had cats named Mom Cat, Gray Gray, and
Mom Cat. I do know of a family that named their dog Kitty. And they go outside and they call, "Here, Kitty!" Spot was the friendliest dog in town, and barked only at other dogs who set up a racket whenever the garbage man appeared. He was a familiar town character, and the only name people called him was the garbage man. The ladies who sat on their porches wearing white linen dresses said he was of mixed blood. He wasn't black, he wasn't brown. He seldom spoke or was spoken to by those whose garbage and trash he hauled away. He was dirty and he smelled. It was, shall we say, a byproduct of his profession. The only unique thing about the garbage man was the tattoo on the back of his weathered right hand. It was a red heart inscribed with the words, "I love you." The garbage man drove daily up and down the alleys of the town with Spot sitting next to him in the cab of the old pickup. He took an unusual interest in his work. Not only did he empty the stinking and overflowing garbage cans that stood at the back gates and garages of homes, but he also picked up trash that people had dumped along the roadsides and in dry creek beds. The garbage man had made the town of Pleasant Hill not only pleasant, but beautiful. Well, this was reason to admire his unique profession. The townspeople thought he was not as admirable as he was simple. Apparently, he could not read or write, for he never sent a monthly bill for his work. who graciously accept any payment from a customer, but some didn't think to pay him for months at a time. Others simply thought the removal of trash was one of the services provided by City Hall. And this voluntary pickup of trash along the roadway, well, was just another sign that he wasn't too bright. The garbage man in Spot lived alone, somewhere north of town. The gossip was that he was divorced or that his wife had left him. Small wonder, who'd want to be married to a garbage collector? People did see him with a few friends at the end of the day before he headed out of town with his truckload of garbage, but they were trash too. The white trash of the town, men and women that hung around the bar and the pool hall down by the railroad tracks. The garbage man was a mystery that aroused little curiosity except from little children. As he drove down the alley with Spot's head hanging out the side window, the children would ask their mothers, "Where does that man take the garbage?" And their mothers, shooing their children out of the kitchen, would answer, "To the dump, dear. Now run outside and play." And that was the extent of the curiosity about the man of mixed blood with the heart tattooed on his right hand. The garbage man was reliable most of the time. Sometimes he'd fail to appear for several days. It was rumored that he went on drinking binges. But who wouldn't be tempted to get drunk handling stinking garbage all day long? One day he failed to appear, and the day grew into two, then four, then seven. The garbage cans of Pleasant Hill overflowed as trash, litter, and junk spilled over into the alleys. The stink was terrible, and the complaints rose like high tide under a full moon. The part-time mayor and the town's police chief decided they should go and see what had happened. So they headed north out of town to find the garbage man. No one knew for sure where he lived since no one had visited his small farm. The road ran through a timber of tall cottonwoods, and soon they saw a battered mailbox half falling off its post. Painted in crude, childlike letters on its side was "Garbage Pickup." They turned off the county road and onto a deeply rutted dirt track that led back into the timber. As they drove along, they could see pieces of paper and tin cans scattered along the side of the road. The road grew narrower, became a narrow road. No. Antenna picks up. And more rutted as they traveled back into the hills. Cresting a hilltop, the mayor slammed on the brakes of his car. He and the police chief gasped in disbelief. Before them was a little valley with a tumble-down, unpainted shack and a rickety swayback barn in the center. But what held them in wordless shock was that the entire valley was filled with garbage, mountains of trash, cans and bottles, rusted bodies of old cars, broken-down furniture. The stench was breathtaking. As they drove down into the valley between the towering mounds of garbage, the mayor kept repeating, "My God, my God. He took all the garbage home with him." As their car came out of the end of the tunnel of trash, they saw Spot in front of the rundown house sitting beside a giant pile of garbage. They got out of the car, but Spot didn't move or bark. She just sat and looked at them. When the two men came close, they saw it. Next to her paw, sticking out of a landslide of garbage, was a hand tattooed with a red heart and the words, "I love you." A lot more stories like that in there, but just let your mind roam for a little while about he who takes the sins of the world unto himself, or however that goes. So that's one story. Now I'm going to ask you to do some more personal kind of stories. I'm going to tell you something that some of you will believe immediately, and some of you will intuitively think, "Hey, that's probably true," and some of you will say, "I don't believe that." I sometimes lead seminars for groups, and I don't know, about a year or so ago, a little bit more than that maybe, I led a weekend retreat for a group of men from the Knights of Columbus. And I said to them what I'm about to say to you, that if a person really wants to get in touch with who they are, there's a lot of ways to do it. There's dozens of ways to get in touch with who we are, but one beginning point that many people find very helpful is to identify what your favorite fairy tale is. And when you identify that favorite fairy tale and look into it, you'll discover that at least one of the characters in the fairy tale is very much in the same kind of life situation that you are, in some metaphorical way. And if you look very closely, you might find that some of the other characters in the fairy tale are parts of yourself that are a little less obvious. And that fairy tale you choose to be your favorite is one that probably reveals a very important theme in your own life. He just couldn't believe it. A fairy tale's for kids. He says, there's no... he was so... He just about left. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, what's your favorite fairy tale? And he just thought for a minute. He said, well, he said, it's the one about the three little pigs that went to market. Well, you know, there is no fairy tale about the three little pigs that went to market. There's a fairy tale about the three little pigs. You know, where the one builds a straw house and one a stick house and one a brick house. And then there's another little nursery rhyme that says, this little pig went to market, this little pig stayed home, this little pig had roast beef, you know. Mm-hmm. He'd mix them both up. Well, that doesn't happen by accident any more than Freudian slips happen by accident. He mixed up two. So I said to him, okay, you know, I knew he had mixed two of them up, but he just isn't into fairy tales, obviously. He didn't know he'd mixed it up. So I just said to him, well, tell me that fairy tale. And he said, well, he said, it was so long ago I heard it. He said, I got to think about it. And then he said, it's about these three little pigs, and one of them goes to market, and one of them stays home, and one cries, wee, 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 all the way home. And he said something like that. It was very close to what I just said. And I said, and you think that fairy tale's not about your life, huh? And he said, no way, no way. So I said, well, you're probably right, but maybe you're not. Let's find out. Tell me a little bit about your life. He said, well, for one thing, he says, there's no pigs in it at all. I don't know anything about it. He didn't know the first thing about pigs or pig farms or anything like that.
He was a concrete thinker.
But he did start telling about his life, and he said, he said in his family where he grew up, there were actually five children. But when his mother died, the three youngest stayed home with his dad, and the two oldest were shipped off to live with an aunt in Montana. And the three little kids that were left, he was the oldest, he was the brother, and he had a younger sister and a younger brother. And he had to kind of take care of them. Dad was there, but mother was dead, and dad was kind of upset by the death enough so that he wasn't as present for the kids as he might otherwise have been, and his two older siblings had been shipped off. He said it was so hard for him taking on the job of being the adult in the family caring for his younger children, that sometimes he would cry, but he was embarrassed to say this, but he found that he was waiting the battle out at night. And so we looked at that story. And of course, he was the oldest pig. I mean, in the kids that were there, he was the one that built the brick house and that took care of his younger siblings, the one that made the house out of straw and the one that made the house out of sticks. And he's the one that went wee-wee at home. And when he realized that, he was converted to the seminary he stayed in. We looked at ways in which we can learn more about ourselves from dreams and fairy tales and whatever we do.
In our family, we call it Bongard Bongard.
I've missed this. Can you explain what you just said? How was that?
They wee-wee-wee all the way home.
Oh. we would have wheeze with us. thank you for explaining that one to me.
I hope it got on tape.
So just for kicks, but you know, because it's fun to do, but also in case anybody in here would just like to play around with this. If no one else does, I'll do mine. We go to when? to 11:30?
Gerald doesn't want to hear yours.
So who's going to volunteer? Who would like to surface what your favorite fairy tale is and just take a look at it and see what that little kid inside can put together?
Peter Pan?
Sure, so how does that story go?
Peter Pan, well, the story of life, didn't want to grow up. I don't think I'm that way.
Well, what's the rest, is that the whole story?
Well, there was the children in the story that flew to Never Never Land with them, mm-hmm. the darlings. Mm-hmm. And they did go home and grow up. I thought that because that was my favorite one at Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. I think an important part of that story is the place, the Never Never Land.
Yeah.
Well, there's still more to it. Can you think of any more to that story? You've mentioned Peter Pan and the children.
Well, the children went home, and then the girl went back and cleaned house for him.
Wendy.
Once a year. I think it was once a year.
Do you remember any more about that?
That's the main points.
Sure. There's a couple of parts that for you don't seem to be important. Captain Hook doesn't seem to have much value for you. The Indians there don't have much value for you. But it seems at first, until we ask questions, and my guess is, and you know, I'm using intuition here, if you're wrong, but my guess is that Wendy's more important to you than what it first seemed. I want to ask you this question. I want to ask you the question. If you want to go deeper into this, we will. If you don't, just be safe and say, I don't want to say anything.
Okay.
But I'm going to ask you some questions, and then have you think about that, and then look at this story and then of your life. If you think about the possibility of there being someone in your life who is like a little boy who hasn't grown up, and if you think about someone in your life who is like Wendy, who takes care of him, you know, cleans his room. So it's starting to already make sense that this story may have a thing that would you be willing or non-willing? You don't have to. This is something that can get real vulnerable. If it opens up, you don't have to do it. But because it does sometimes get very personal, and sometimes it's just so you at any time you want to just say, "Learn enough from this, I quit." Okay. But if you're willing to share, who in your life is this person that's like a boy that hasn't grown up, and who in your life is like Wendy who takes care of that person? And what those themes are like and how it's working, that's kind of what your story's about. That's why this comes to mind.
I can't think of, boy, I do take care of my husband a lot, but he's very capable.
Mm-hmm.
But I do take care of people. I have four little kids in the village with me this week that I'm taking care of.
Mm-hmm. Does it seem to you like you have some things in common with Wendy?
I like being a homemaker. being creative and doing things in the home.
It seems to me one thing about Wendy that I remember is that she was the doubter. She doubted whether she could fly, didn't she?
Wasn't that the little boy?
As he came in the window to pull him all away, she was...
Tinkerbell needed to sprinkle that magic dust.
Tinkerbell didn't want to do that, of course, but... I mean, again, it came to caretaking responsibility, you know, should she leave the house where the man or the dog was holding forth.
A question that you might think about and not even have to answer publicly if you don't want to is if you sometimes feel like maybe you're the mother for the whole family. Yeah. That's the Wendy story, that Peter Pan, as capable as he might be, he was a very capable person, really. He defeated Captain Hook in a sword fight. I don't remember exactly what he did about the crocodile, but he was really, in many ways, very capable. But one of the things that he wanted to do is stay a boy. And so he needed somebody like Wendy to be a mother for him a lot. At least that's what the story implies, is that that was a conflict for him a lot. And in some ways, it was up to Wendy whether she wanted to do that or not. And I think in the story she did, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Yeah. And so that was her choice to do that. And that
And I think, too, so I remember now, when she grew up and married, her daughter continued on doing the housework for him. Which my daughter is a terrible sloth.
And the story is, yeah, she's all part of it, too.
But sometimes these fairy tales bring forth themes that are kind of under the surface for us a lot, and when we look at them, they're brought to the surface and we can make more conscious decisions about them, and those conscious decisions can be to absolutely identify with that solution or to make arrangements here and there, like to go to Neverland yourself once in a while to get away and take a vacation to Disneyland or somewhere.
I like Disneyland.
Yeah, or Holden Village, and sometimes maybe even without the kids. Even husband being one of those kids.
No, my husband puts me down for wanting to go to get Disneyland. He says, why don't you grow up? You're slow. You know, it's going to be a kid.
Well, do you know why? Why would he want you to be grown up? If he was Peter Pan, why wouldn't he want... What did Peter Pan want Wendy to do?
To take care of him.
Yeah. And sometimes go to Never Never Land and play, but if she wouldn't do that with him, it would be his mom. Take care of him so you could keep playing. I know a lot of men who have been accused of that a lot of times. Without mentioning any names at all.
Why do you look at your wife?
These things start to reveal a lot, don't they? You just can't hardly be in one of these groups. I got a lot of stories about that, but I also have to watch my wife. I am going to... Anybody else want to take a look at your favorite fairy tale and see what surfaces for you? Because I'm going to jump right in if you don't.
My name is Cindy, and it's always been Cinderella. Maybe, perhaps because of the name Identity Machine.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Yeah, I know some people whose lives have taken on a particular kind of identity that is related to their name. You could be one of those people. So how do you identify with Cinderella? What's that story about?
It's about a family, a blended family, a stepmother and stepmother's two daughters, and then the stepmother of Cinderella. And so there's no father present. Cinderella is treated very unfairly, having to do the chores, and really neglected, quite neglected, not brought into the family as one of the other daughters who valued and cherished. And,
yeah, I can see already the tears.
Not much yet.
Yes, they are.
So, and Cinderella, it seems like she always, you know, believed in herself and wanted something better. But she needed that.
Do you know who that is?
Her name was God.
Okay.
It was God. I didn't meet God until I was about 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's really ride found freedom, not only because of the age, you know, a chance to get out of the house and make some of your own decisions, but just the whole chance of a new beginning.
Again, if I ask you any questions and you've already done whatever you want to do, just let me know. A question that I have about you personally is your father still living?
He's still living. My mother and father were divorced when I was in first grade.
Okay.
There's three children in the family. I'm the youngest. Mm-hmm. Three, which I believe Cinderella was the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
In that record.
Cinderella had a life in which her father was quite absent for a lot of the conflicts and developmental phases she went through.
Yeah, exactly. My father was sort of a weekend dad, but a drinking problem, and kind of a children should be seen and not heard kind of attitude.
Yeah. So you already understand a lot of
I guess I do, although I've never done this exercise before, just as you were thinking about that and working with this woman about Peter Pan, I started thinking, oh, this is so clear to me. And yet I always thought that I identified with the Cinderella story because I think the Disney movie came out when I was a child. And so that was really popular and given a name identity, but then there are so many other parallel things.
I hope you don't mind if I give you some suggestions about things to look for in your life. And, you know, I'm just throwing this out for Cinderella, because this is a common theme for her life. Cinderella, in the story, finds that her life is fulfilled how?
By a Prince Charming, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. The caution that I want to throw out is that in real life it doesn't often work that way, but it's a temptation for Cinderella to think that that's what will happen.
Mm-hmm. We just celebrated our 13th wedding anniversary yesterday. It was my first time.
Oh, okay.
But, okay.
Yeah. But that's one of those things that for many Cinderellas, at about the time of the 13th wedding anniversary, they will be aware that there are certain difficulties to that solution. Yeah, and just, I won't say any more about that, but there's a lot of subplots in that story that I really
should let you talk before I told you my husband was sitting there.
Well, you know, these are things that if they emerge, they emerge outside of this place too, so. I think our time is just about up, isn't it? Does anybody have a last thing that you want to throw in? Because I came late, we might go over 2 minutes. It's about 1 minute till 11:30. And I apologize for coming late. Does anybody have anything you want to close us with? Well, then.
Do you want to tell us your favorite?
Say that again.
You want to tell us your favorite character?
Yes, and I will go into that in some detail probably on Friday, because Wednesday I want to take doing demonstrations.
Why don't you do it now?
My favorite fairy tale? Do you want to stay for that? It'll take 5 minutes. Okay. If you run the tape another 5 minutes, it's fine with me. If you shut it off now, that's fine too. Because our time is officially over, but we did start late.
Where you are.
Mike in the sky.
The reason I want to tell you my favorite fairy tale, and I won't go into a whole lot of detail about it, I've thought about this now for 25 years. I think the very first chapel talk I ever gave at St. Olaf College when I was teaching there was on this fairy tale. I had just begun to discover its meaning for me. And over the years, the meaning has been much richer about this story. It's Pinocchio. I'll tell it to you briefly, and then I'll tell you some of the insights I've had recently that had never dawned on me when I first gave this as a chapel talk. Geppetto was a wonderful craftsman, and he was able to craft wood into wonderful pieces of delight, like toys, furniture, grandfather clocks, many wonderful things, a little wooden rocking horse. He was just a wonderful craftsman. But the absolute most wondrous creation that he ever made was a puppet made in his own image and likeness. And that puppet was so lifelike that Geppetto gave it a name, called Pinocchio. And due to some wonderful things that happened when Geppetto was asleep, which we won't go into those details, Pinocchio became a live puppet, but he was still a wooden boy.
He wasn't a real human being yet. He looked a lot like Geppetto. He was in Geppetto's image and likeness, but he wasn't truly of the same substance as Geppetto yet. He was wood instead of human. And Geppetto had some guidance for him. It could be called law. Sometimes we talk about the Torah as, you know, a guide and a teaching, and sometimes we talk about it as law. So the first one was, Pinocchio, you're supposed to go to school. So Pinocchio picks up his school books and he starts off, and there's some temptation along the way, and instead of going to school, they go to the circus, and a man named Stromboli sees this wonderful puppet, no strings, able to sing and dance, and so Stromboli puts him center stage in the circus, and people clap and clap for Pinocchio, and he's so glad about that, but then Stromboli doesn't want to let him get away, so he puts him in a cage. And Pinocchio has this dilemma that he likes the applause of the crowd, but he also is trapped by it. He can't do his own thing, really. He can't. And he can only do things that people applaud. If he goes against the current, against public opinion, if he would protest the Vietnam War in a place where people really thought that patriotism was the issue, he couldn't do it because he needed the applause of the people. He wanted people to like him. But his fairy godmother helped get him out of that dilemma, and he went back to Geppetto, and Geppetto said, okay, back to school, and the next day he goes off, or whatever it is, the next week or month, whatever, he goes off to school, and he gets tempted again, and this time he goes to Pleasure Island. In the meantime, every time he tells a lie, his nose grows. He goes to Pleasure Island, and he starts drinking root beers, and smoking cigarettes, and eating ice cream cones, and doing all these wonderful pleasurable things, of which there are many that our bodies will respond pleasurably to. And he begins to grow ears and a tail, and notices that that's kind of odd, that instead of becoming more human, he's becoming more like an animal. And one day when he begins to speak, the noise comes out as a bray, like the braying of a donkey. And Pinocchio realizes that he's turned into a jackass at this place. But he goes down to the shore of the island and he brays out the word father, who is Geppetto. And he wants to be back in union with Geppetto again, his creator. And so he does, at great risk to his own person, or his own puppet nature, whatever it is, he floats across the ocean where Geppetto has been swallowed by Monstro the whale, and he finds a way to help release Geppetto and Figaro and Cleo and one of the, in the movie of it. And then he becomes a real boy, a real human being, when he is in union with his creator. That story had great meaning for me 25 years ago, and I only realized within the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, some of the pitfalls in that story, which have, of course, as all fairy tales will do, reveal the blind side as well as the part you're aware of. Many of you here might well pick this up immediately because the cultural awareness is so strong now, how very patriarchal that story is. It's a story about Geppetto as being a man and about Pinocchio, his beloved son, being a man, and there are no women in the story. And it has to do with a man's world, you know, even a good man's world who searches for God and who wants to do the will of his father is still in a limited world, a patriarchal world. That's been, of course, as you would well know if you understand how fairy tales are put together in meaningful fairy tales, what they omit. It has been a struggle for me. Because that's just the way I grew up, and it was hard for me to understand even how limited my world was. Even though in my own world, unlike Pinocchio's world, there were many women in it, and some of them I loved very much, but still that fairy tale was. Well, I appreciate your waiting for me. I appreciate your staying late. If any of you want to see something that will be very interesting for you, however you interpret it, I encourage you to come on Wednesday at 3:30. We're going to do a longer session then because there just is a lot to do and I want more than one person to have a chance if they so desire. And thank you again.
Thank you.